Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
You're listening to Dakota Spotlight. My name is James Wallner.
Public Safety Dispatch, this is Mike.
Hey, Mike. I need a DCI agent and eyeless filming over here.
Okay. And what do you got going on?
Well, I have a dead body in the ditch.
Welcome to another episode of Dakota Spotlight. The rebroadcast of Zealand will return next week so I can bring you this fascinating installment. In the year 2020, the Attorney General of South Dakota was driving home one night when he struck and killed someone with his car. He called 911 and said he hit something but didn't know what it was. The next day, the deceased body of Joe Beaver was discovered in the ditch. This story has been on my list for a Dakota Spotlight season for some time. But I was recently delighted to discover that someone else has produced a podcast series about this event, and he's done it very much in the style of Dakota Spotlight, so I think you will enjoy it too. What follows is my fascinating interview with Lee Strubinger of South Dakota Public Broadcasting about this crazy story, and after that, the full first episode of his series titled Short Walk. Now, we may never know exactly what transpired that night in 2020 when the Attorney General of South Dakota struck and killed Joe Beaver with his automobile, but Lee Strubinger and others have done their best to untangle this web. Now, Spotlight Plus subscribers who are directly supporting this show, they got this episode days ago and without any advertisements. I would really appreciate it if you too would support my work here by becoming a Spotlight Plus subscriber. Here is a short list of what you can get with a monthly contribution. All episodes of Dakota Spotlight, over 120 of them now, advertisement free. That's right, no ads. You'll get new episodes early and a subscriber-only newsletter with behind-the-scenes goodies from me about the show. You can also get access to documents, videos, photographs, as well as perks and surprises. And there's much, much more. Head over to dakotaspotlight.com to learn more. Now let's dive into my interview with Lee Strubinger of South Dakota Public Broadcasting and learn more about this gripping tale from the prairie. Lee Strubinger, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining the show.
It's a real honor.
So I have been listening to your podcast called A Short Walk, and I wanted to interview you because I felt like there was a lot of similarities to Dakota Spotlight, and I think my listeners would enjoy listening to your show. Why don't you give us the synopsis of what the season is about?
Yeah, so this is really a look at South Dakota's first ever impeachment process. That's something that the state has never really gone through before. And, you know, what it really, the events that kind of kick it off really have like kind of a true crime element to it. There's this fatal car crash that the Attorney General is involved in. And, you know, there's kind of this sort of mystery surrounding what happened that night and sort of this high-powered politician, top-ranking official involved in this fatal crash, didn't see what he hit, says he didn't see what he hit, maintains he didn't see what he hit, and then the next day comes back to find the body of Joe Beaver in the ditch. And so there's a lot of just kind of circumstances really kind of leading up to this event. And, you know, ultimately he kind of loses public confidence, and the pressure campaign to get him out of office really starts to ramp up kind of months later. And so it really kind of, yeah, just kind of looks at that, what that whole thing looked like.
And it's really well done. I think you did a great job. And we're going to listen to some of that here in a minute. You should know, this story was on my list of potential seasons to...
I beat you to it.
Yeah. And I'm not alone there. You know, I've spoken to several people over the last few years. Oh, that's a good one, because there's a lot of material available, audio, video, court records, and you just did a really good job. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. Are you from South Dakota, or?
Yeah, no, I'm from Illinois originally, and I fell in love with public radio when I was in undergrad, and but I was a the problem was I was a print major, and I really struggled to kind of get into public radio. It was about 2012, 2013 when I was really trying to do that. And you know, public radio stations, at least in Illinois, were still kind of struggling from the Great Recession. You know, wasn't a lot of money out there to hire a young, you know, ambitious, you know, untested public radio reporter. So I left Illinois and moved to Colorado for a little bit. Freelanced in Denver there. I was lucky enough through kind of my grad school network to pick up a little freelancing gigs and met some people who ultimately pointed me in the direction of South Dakota. And that was about 8 years ago. And yeah, I've been here ever since. I've been covering state government and doing that work.
And we should mention that that's for South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. South Dakota SDPB. Yep.
And it looks like your role there is politics and public policy reporter.
Yep. So a lot of this, you know, while the podcast itself really starts out as a bit of kind of true crime and that kind of element, it really kind of leans into a lot of the sort of looking at this from a government and kind of policy perspective, you know, while still holding, you know, some of that interest of, you know, how could they or how could they not know like what happened that night? And one of the things that you mentioned about this story, you know, it kind of all being out there with like the documents and all the elements and stuff like that. That's part of the reason I pursued this is because we have the 911 tape of the night that he called. And once that large investigation file was released to the public, there were just so many audio elements out there. So between that and sitting through a lot of the committee hearings and impeachment inquiry hearings into this case, and you know, chasing lawmakers and the governor around while this whole thing is going down, I just had a lot of audio that I could really draw off of to kind of make it happen.
How about we go back to that night in September of 2020 and kind of walk through it a little bit? At the time of this recording, I am actually speaking from Spink County, South Dakota, and not far from here is the town of Redfield. Tell us what was going on in Redfield that evening.
So yeah, the Republican Party in each county has what they call Lincoln Day dinners. And it's kind of like a big fundraiser. And they'll bring in, you know, some you know, politicians from either statewide or local to kind of give speeches and raise money, et cetera. It's kind of one of the reasons, you know, why the state party is very strong. It's very well organized. And, you know, a lot of these events happen. They typically happen in the spring, but because of the COVID-19 pandemic really starting in earnest, they were occurring in the fall instead. So that was kind of like a unique and sort of different circumstance in this particular case. And so Jason Raunsberg, the attorney general at the time, built his name recognition, his political career from going to every single county in the state and meeting with county party officials who would be at something like the Lincoln Day dinner. And that sort of track record, that formula, is something that we explore in a later episode. And so he's at this Lincoln Day dinner. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds is there. State Senator, now School and Public Lands Commissioner Brock Greenfield was there, because I believe he was representing that district at the time. And so just kind of your typical average Lincoln Day dinner in Speak County at the bar and grill called Roosters there in Redfield. And so he ends up leaving that restaurant, I think around like 9 p.m. He's got a roughly 2-hour drive back to the state capitol, Pierre. And when he is driving through the town of Highmore, he looks at his gas meter and he decides, you know, tries to decide whether or not he should get gas. He decides to keep going. And kind of as he's accelerating out of the town of Highmore, he hits the 65 mile per hour sort of speed limit, if you will. He then accelerates And that's when he hits and kills Joe Beaver outside of that house, or outside of town limits, about a quarter mile outside of town. And we'll never really know why Joe Beaver was walking along the side of the road. His truck was in the ditch a little ways outside of town. He kind of ran off the road earlier that day and struck one of those large hay bales that kind of sit in the ditch when they sort of mow those ditches up. And it kind of bent his bumper. He wasn't really able to drive his truck, and it was getting dark. So he and his cousin Victor decided to fix that up in the morning.
His cousin was not with them, correct?
So his cousin was with him when they were trying to fix the bumper, but they kind of decided to give up as the sun was going down. Victor dropped Joe off at his house, said Joe was looking kind of tired, so he left him there, and Victor went back to his house, and then for some reason, Joe got up and presumably walked out to his truck for something. You know, the crash investigation says that he had his rolling tobacco and his depression medication was still in the truck, but he was walking back towards the town of Highmore, so it's not entirely clear what was going on there. And that's, yeah, really the events that kind of kicked it all off.
So let's tell folks about what the Attorney General said happened, or what he did immediately after striking, as he said, striking something.
Yeah, so a few seconds after the crash, about 40 seconds or so, he stops his vehicle and he calls 911. And a lot of people think that was kind of like weird, like why would you call 911? But when you take a look at his vehicle, it is not really drivable. It would run, but you would not want to be driving this vehicle. So he calls 911 and he says,
"Hello, 911. This is Allie. How can I help you?"
"Allie, I'm the Attorney General, and I hit something. By Highmore."
And it's not until later that the 911 operator says, "Well, you know, what did you hit? Do you think it was a deer?" And he's like, "I don't know. It could be."
"Highmore, and it was in the middle of the road."
It was right in the roadway. And so he maintains that he hit something in the lane of travel. But then, not to give away too much, but the crash investigation revealed that it did not happen in the roadway, and it actually happened on the shoulder of the road. And so that's kind of where a lot of that sort of like what was happening here, the kind of questions really started to surround Jason Roundsburg and what he was doing that night.
And I would like to mention to my listeners right now that if you listen to the Mandan murders, you will probably recognize a voice in this podcast if you listen to Short Walk, and that would be Joe Ahrens. Joe Ahrens was the lead investigator in the RJR quadruple homicide in Mandan. And we heard him a lot in season 9, The Mandan Murders. And you might be wondering why a North Dakota investigator would be investigating in South Dakota. Lee, could you explain that to us?
This gets a little bit into kind of the way the state's government is kind of structured. So you have the Highway Patrol, which is, you know, the troopers that, you know, kind of pull us over and monitor the interstates and highways, etc. They do crash reconstruction. And we also have what's called the Division of Criminal Investigation. That will be kind of the law enforcement officers who interrogate individuals about certain crimes. Those two entities fall under different branches of the state government. The Highway Patrol is under the Department of Public Safety, which is under the governor's office. The Division of Criminal Investigation is under the Attorney General's office. And so, like 2 days after this crash, the governor, Governor Kristi Noem, called a press conference to say, "We're going to bring in North Dakota investigators to investigate this because the head of the Division of Criminal Investigation is appointed by the Attorney General." So there's obvious conflicts of interest there. So the governor brings in Joe Ahrens and Arnie Rummel, some investigators from North Dakota, down to really kind of push this investigation and sort of look into what happens. And, you know, we didn't really get a sense of what that looked like and who those two officers were, those two investigators were, until, you know, months later when, you know, the governor releases those interrogation videos that they did of the Attorney General, which had, you know, obvious ramifications and were incredibly newsworthy, et cetera, which is also where a lot of the audio for this podcast comes from, right?
So what did the Attorney General do in the following days? I believe he also put out a press release at some point.
Yeah, he put out a couple press releases. Basically, he was saying that there was a lot of innuendo and rumors floating around about this incident. I mean, South Dakota is a small state. The political class is even smaller, and people talk, right? That's one of the reasons why I'm incredibly confident we know that he was not drinking that night. Breathalyzers and drug tests and alcohol tests sort of prove that his system was clean. Nobody saw him drinking that night. So anybody who's kind of wondering whether or not this was a drunk driving accident, I'm fairly confident that we would know if that were the case. With that small, you know, I guess, political population, if you will, a lot of things were swirling around. And he wanted to sort of put water on that and cool that down because he was like, we're going to let the investigation run out. And then, you know, we'll make statements, et cetera. Thought I hit something that was likely to be a deer and, you know, right in the roadway. I stopped immediately to check things out, didn't see what I hit, etc. And then, you know, he just kind of went radio silent there sort of after that to kind of respect the investigation.
Maybe we should rewind real quick. People are wondering how they actually discovered the body.
Once they couldn't find whatever it was that Roundsburg had hit, because it was going to take like an hour for the tow truck driver to get out there to load it up and then an hour to go back to pier, the Hyde County Sheriff, Mike Volek, actually lent Roundsburg his personal vehicle. And so Roundsburg was able to kind of drive home shortly after that accident. The idea would be that Roundsburg would return the car the next morning. And that's when they discovered the body. They drive back to Highmore. He fills up the sheriff's vehicle. The sheriff lives pretty close to where the crash actually took place. And so they were doubling back out of Highmore, so heading towards Pier again, but just outside of town limits where the crash happened, there was some debris. And Roundsburg pulled over to kind of check out whatever it was that, you know, to maybe see if in broad daylight they could tell what it was that he hit. Roundsburg's chief of staff was there, and he kind of narrates sort of what happened in that moment. But they did kind of stop at this kind of pile of debris, and Roundsburg was just kind of curious about, man, what was it that I hit? Maybe you'd be able to find it.
I believe the Attorney General pointed and said, "There's a man," and suddenly they had a body.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then that opens up the homicide investigation, right? And that's where this whole thing really kind of blows open. You know, all of this happens before we even get to where I kind of start the first episode, which is a press conference that the governor puts on later that day. The governor calls a press conference in Sioux Falls, which is not normally where she has called press conferences, and definitely not on like a Sunday. And so basically her and the Department of Public Safety Secretary, Craig Price, you know, a handful of reporters are there. They say the Attorney General was involved in a fatal crash. And the reporters are standing there, including some of my colleagues, were like, there was kind of like a bit of a pause when they were like, do you guys have any questions? You know, just kind of like taking it all in, like what is going on here? And then people were like, well, is the Attorney General even alive? You know, like what happened here? And like, what's his condition? How many people were involved? Is there anything you can tell us? And because it was so early, like hours into this investigation even starting, it was basically like, we can't tell you anything quite yet. And then from what the family experienced, the Nemec family, or well, the Beaver family, and one of the cousins being former state lawmaker Nick Nemec, you know, they were just kind of like, what is going on here? We're not hearing anything from law enforcement. They're taking their time. And then keep in mind, the investigation took like 6 months before it was completed, and then the charges were brought, and they were just kind of these misdemeanors, and I think everybody expected something a lot more, like felonies. And so the Beaver family was feeling pretty jaded about everything on the state level, and they were feeling like the state was kind of getting their ducks in a row to sort of, you know, I think the perception at the time was that are they hedging on behalf of the Attorney General? Are they kind of, you know, how are they manipulating this investigation to kind of sweep this under the rug, if you will, a little bit, while they're mourning the loss of their family member? But it's not until we get windows into this investigation file that we really see why it took so long. I mean, it is a thorough, thorough document that just lays it all out there. And we only start to see windows into that once we get into the first impeachment hearing. And that's when the family is like, wow, they really left no stone unturned here, and really felt confident in what the state like really pieced together.
That's great, because obviously people of power, that's one of the first things that's going to run in people's minds when a person in power commits some kind of potential crime. Are they going to be treated like everyone else? So that's part of the reason that made this story so captivating or interesting from the beginning, I think, because people were on high alert for any kind of special treatment for the Attorney General. And maybe you could touch on the distracted driving stuff they came up with.
So in the interrogations that were conducted by the North Dakota agents, they start to peel back Roundsburg's cell phone usage on the drive. And if you listen closely, you know, they kind of ask about, you know, were you using your cell phone at all? And it was quiet. And they were like, did you make any calls? And he says, nope, the only phone calls I made were to my father. They really started to peel back his phone usage on that drive. You know, he said he wasn't using his phone at the time of the crash, but he was using his phone for about like 70% of his drive from Redfield back to Pierre. And so there was this kind of like, you know, the way he sort of contextualizes it, well, I wasn't using it at the time of the crash, which as far as the investigation file shows, that is technically accurate, but he was using it in the minute leading up to that crash. And so he tells the investigators, I was looking at the radio or my speedometer, but he wasn't entirely sure which. Yeah, there's a real question there of, well, if you weren't using your phone at that particular moment, then what exactly were you doing? You weren't focused on the road. You were distracted driving. That's kind of their point that they're making. We still aren't entirely clear like what he was doing at the time. But in the minute leading up to that, one of the things that Roundsburg was doing was, this was, keep in mind, this is an election year. And he was looking at a right-wing website and some articles about now President Joe Biden and his family's business dealings in China. There was like a documentary out there called like Riding the Dragon, I think. And he was looking at an article kind of about that. And those kind of like lightning rod, like conservative issues was something that he really had like a pulse on. And he really used that to kind of build his base and build his brand kind of early on. And that's how he kind of ultimately sort of built his base and built his recognition and ultimately ended up getting the nomination and the job.
There's another really interesting part about this story. I found this fascinating. He had two cell phones. And what he was doing with the other one was basically sort of deception, wasn't it? And considering that he was Attorney General, can you explain what he was doing? And did you have any thoughts on that? It was just, I know some of the victims' families have commented on it.
Yeah. So do you want the short answer or the long answer?
I'll take either one.
Yeah. The long answer being, you know, we sat through hours and hours and hours of this House impeachment panel that was supposed to be looking into the Attorney General's conduct following the crash. And sort of what came out of the House impeachment panel was a recommendation to not impeach. And when you read their report, one of the things that doesn't come up is this particular aspect that you just mentioned in your question. We didn't find this out until the Senate trial ultimately happened. And basically what he was doing was he had this app running on his personal phone called On My Way. And it's kind of this like app that sort of racks up points for you turn it on while you're driving, and it logs the fact that you are driving without doing anything on your phone. So you're logging these, and you get like benefits and stuff like that. I'm not entirely sure what the benefits look like. It might be like a free soda at the gas station or something like that. And so he has this app running when he leaves Redfield and he's driving towards Pier. But like I mentioned earlier, he was on his other phone, his state phone, his like attorney general state phone, for about 70% of the drive.
Right.
And that's one of the things that the North Dakota investigators really kind of peel back, get him to just sort of be like, well, you know, I don't use my phone, and then I use my phone some of the time, and then, you know, I'll look at articles, and if I see that they're really long, I'll just scroll to the next one. Was ultimately what they got him to kind of admit in their interrogation. I would say that was one of the really kind of key points that the prosecutors laid out in the Senate trial, was, you know, this kind of deception to that app company was another one of those, like, you know, pressure points on this particular issue that weighed in on him. I'm sure if a lot of the listeners are from North or South Dakota, they'll kind of realize, you know, this is a heavily Republican state. But for those who are outside of the state, this is a supermajority Republican legislature in both chambers, and we're talking about a Republican attorney general. So there was like a bit of an identity crisis going on as well, because Republicans around that time were like pretty fed up with the impeachment word. That was something that Donald Trump had been subject to twice by House Democrats, so they were a little fatigued by that. And so there were a lot of factors in there that you know, were really kind of weighing in on this Republican legislature as they considered this question.
You know, it just does not sound good for the attorney general, which the common description of that role is, and you can correct me if I don't get this quite right, the highest ranking law enforcement officer or agent in the state, right? Is that a fair way of summing it up?
I guess how I've described it and how others have described it is the state's top law enforcement official. And that's actually come up recently too, because he had a disciplinary hearing before our state Supreme Court, and which was kind of brought on by the state bar. And he has maintained that he doesn't view himself as being the state's top law enforcement official. And one of the reasons for that is because he doesn't have the highway patrol underneath him, that's a governor's office designation. And one of the reasons why the Supreme Court sort of questioned him on that and pushed back on that is, you know, he can deputize law enforcement, and he can also deputize like state's attorneys for crimes that occur in counties around the state.
Regardless of how he sees it himself, it's not a good look when someone holding that position is basically, you know, that the two cell phone thing for me is just, I would say it's embarrassing, actually. You know, you're obviously deceiving someone. You're getting points for not using your phone on your personal phone while he's basically driving with looking at his phone 70% of the time on his work phone. So that was not a good look.
And it's also, I think it's also worth pointing out too, that Raunsberg was kind of an atypical politician. He had never won an election before becoming the state's top law enforcement official. He ran for office in 2014, ran for a statewide office. He ran for United States Senate in 2014. And it was kind of a pretty packed primary. Now U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, that was his first election to the United States Senate. And so because there were five people in that race, he came in fifth out of five. He got like 2,000 votes, like barely 3%. And so one of the things that he was able to do sort of following that election as he went for attorney general was he was able to say, you know, I'm a former U.S. Senate candidate, right? Which carries a little bit of weight to it. But that's also when he started sort of crafting his kind of style to get elected, which was to visit every county in the state and meet with, you know, sheriffs and state's attorneys and county party officials.
Yeah, that's not a bad style. I mean, if you want to, people appreciate that, I'm sure.
I think they call it the full Grassley in Iowa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about the victim, Joe Beaver? You spent some time talking about him, I think, an episode, which is what I do on Dakota Spotlight. In my most recent season, I dedicated two full episodes to the victims. Granted, there were four. But what did you learn about Joe, the victim?
Yeah, so I really wanted to kind of take a step back and learn more about him, because I was pretty unsatisfied with what I did know about him, which like wasn't much. And I was writing his name over and over and over in stories. And I was like, I need to know like more about this person. He really died in this kind of violent and very public way. You know what I mean? He ultimately has like no idea that this happened, right? He's kind of like, you know, his name is fairly well recognized now, but he was kind of, you know, one of the family members in a public hearing described him as an average Joe. You know, he wasn't a very public person. But one of the things that I came to learn about him, was that he was a man who, while yes, he did struggle with depression most of his life, he also, you know, thought very deeply about the meaning of existence, his own existence, the role of society, and how that, you know, how that kind of plays out. And he read a lot of Nietzsche and a lot of like philosophy. He was always checking out books at the local library and things like that. And he was just kind of known as like a pretty intelligent person. He did struggle to hold down jobs. He would, as he dealt with depression, it was kind of hard for him to hold down jobs. One of the things that didn't really make it in the podcast that I kind of mentioned just a little bit was he kind of started just kind of painting houses. You know, he bought enough equipment to sort of, you know, paint houses in Highmore. He ended up painting his own house, which was right next to the county courthouse a little bit. And so he kind of would just do that. It was kind of solitary work. He was able to, you know, work by himself and kind of do that. He worked at the grocery store there in Highmore, and he was, you know, known as very, a very friendly person and things like that. That's where he met his wife, Jenny. He moved to California for a little bit. That's when he kind of fell in love with gardening. Again, kind of like, seems to me like a bit of some solitary work there, just kind of yourself with your own thoughts. And he started cultivating jade plants, which was something that he kind of brought back to South Dakota. Another thing that didn't quite make it into the episode, there was a basically kind of an injunction by the courts once those interrogation videos came out. During that hearing, Nick Nemec, one of Joe Beaver's cousins, shows up to that hearing where they're going to put a pause on those proceedings. He brings this massive jade plant and sets it on the desk where you testify before the state committee. You know, and he basically said, like, you know, if Joe liked you, he gave you a jade plant. That was like how he showed you that you were his friend. And so, yeah, I thought that was like a really powerful moment that Nick Nemec really brought.
Again, I really enjoyed your podcast. I think my listeners will enjoy it. They're similar formats. How can people listen to your podcast?
Yeah, so if you just search in your podcast app, Short Walk, at least as I've done on like the Apple podcast app, it'll pop up. And if that doesn't quite pop up, you can just put SDPB, and as in like South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and that should bring it up as well. And I really appreciate that.
Of course. I think you can also listen at, well, I had it up here. Is it
sdpb.org/shortwalk, and they'll be kind of up on a website there as well.
Well, Lee, thanks so much for joining me. I'm going to play your first episode of Short Walk right now. Have a great day, and thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's September 13th, 2020. South Dakota's Republican Governor Kristi Noem is in Sioux Falls for the final day of a PGA Champions Tour event. What might seem routine now is a big deal at the time. It's just 6 months after the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic. With no end in sight, most big events around the world are canceled. Except in South Dakota, which openly declares the state open for business. That means many events are still happening, like the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally and even a fireworks display at Mount Rushmore. However, in the midst of moments like these, something happens to challenge the state's party unity, political identity, and the resolve of its public institutions. That September weekend in 2020, Governor Noem calls a last-minute press conference at the Sioux Falls City Hall and is joined by Craig Price, the Secretary of the Department of Public Safety. A handful of reporters show up. It's a Sunday.
We ready?
In 2020, Governor Noem is frequently offering news conferences to highlight the state's response to the coronavirus. Those are typically during the weekdays and at the state capitol, 2.5 hours away. This press conference is different, feels urgent.
Well, good afternoon. Last night at about 10:30 p.m. in Hyde County, the Attorney General was involved in a crash while driving on U.S. Highway 14 just west of Highmore. There was a fatality, and law enforcement is working on identifying the deceased and notifying the family.
Noem says the State Highway Patrol will run the investigation, which is standard procedure. Secretary Price will oversee it and report directly to her. Price steps up to the podium and gives a brief statement.
South Dakota Highway Patrol routinely investigates fatality crashes across our state, and we will handle this as we would any other fatal crash. If there are any questions, we would be open to any questions you might have.
Reporters pause for a moment, taking in the information. The state's attorney general is involved in a crash that killed someone. One reporter offers up a question, followed by others, and they're all met with a similar answer. Condition of the attorney general?
As with any investigation, there's a lot of questions that we can't answer. That would be one of those questions.
How many people are involved?
We know that the attorney general was involved. The rest of it is being investigated, and those details will come out at a later time.
Who was in the car?
And the side thing of these investigations, there's so many things that you can't comment on specific to that. There's a lot of details that are going to be being run down, as with any fatal crash that's investigated, and that information will be available at a later time.
Aspects of the crash?
There's no aspects of the crash that I can explain that happened. I can tell you that as far as the response to a fatality crash, we have officers that are responding. We have officers that are highly trained in investigating these types of incidents, and they're the ones that are working the incident.
The press conference is brief, but those few moments on that Sunday afternoon are the beginning of a case that challenges the reputation of some of the state's top leaders. I'm Lee Schrubinger, and this is SDPB's Short Walk. The impeachment of South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg. It's a look at the arc of one political career, the events of a dark night, and the ripple effects.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
911, this is Allie. How can I help you?
Allie, I'm the Attorney General, and I don't know. I hit something.
You hit something?
By Highmore. Highmore, and it's in the middle of the road.
Okay, give me 1 second here. Let me get you a map. Do you know?
From the very beginning, the law enforcement investigation into Jason Roundsburg's fatal crash is exhaustive. When the case finally heads through the courts and to the legislature for action, the investigative file is publicly available. It's a massive collection that contains hours of audio and video, as well as hundreds of pages of documents. It provides a glimpse into the investigation, as well as a relatively unfiltered look at a powerful politician in the spotlight. This podcast takes an unflinching look at the investigation file and subsequent response from the courts, lawmakers, and state officials in 9 episodes. There's fresh research and reporting, along with the work of my colleagues and peers who all hustled to break news covering this unprecedented case.
My colleagues attend Governor Noem's press conference in Sioux Falls that Sunday in September 2020. I live on the opposite side of the state in Rapid City, 5 hours away. My journey with this story starts the following day, Monday morning, when I pick up the phone and call Nick Nemec.
Hello?
Nick Nemec lives in Hyde County. He's a farmer who spent a lifetime working the land. I call him the day after the governor's announcement. My recorder only picks up the receiving end. I ask how he's doing.
I could be better, I guess, but yeah.
It's a poor question given the circumstances. Nick Nemec's cousin is Joe Beaver, the man who died in the Attorney General's weekend crash. Nemec is also a former state lawmaker, a Democrat, back when they still got elected in the middle of the state. So he's familiar dealing with reporters.
Well, I can kind of give you a rundown of what happened.
It seems like Nemec has already told this story 100 times, whether to others or himself, just to make sense of it all. He says on Saturday evening, his cousin Joe runs his truck into a ditch about a mile west of Highmore, a remote prairie town on the road to the state's capital. The ditches were freshly mowed. Nemec says Joe hit a round hay bale about the size of his truck.
And bent his bumper, so it was rubbing on the tire. He called my brother and asked Victor to, my Victor's my brother. He called my brother Victor and asked Victor to come and get him and give him a ride back to town.
It's getting dark as Nick's brother Victor and Joe try to straighten out the bumper. They give up, leave the truck in the ditch, and Victor gives Joe a ride back to his house. They'll figure it out the next day.
And so when Victor went to Highmore on Sunday morning, here there was this accident scene where they were directing traffic around this accident scene and had the highway closed down to one lane and all this sort of thing, all kinds of cop cars.
When Victor gets to Joe's house, no one is home, and Joe isn't picking up his phone.
He got a bad feeling in his gut, given that Joe's pickup was in the ditch, you know, half mile beyond this accident site. And Joe was nowhere to be seen.
So Victor calls the county sheriff, who tells the family to wait at Joe's house. And there they wait for hours.
Something.
You hit something.
By Highmore. Highmore. And it's in the middle of the road.
Okay, give me 1 second here. Let me get you a map. Do you know where you're at?
I believe I'm by Highmore. I can see the town.
Okay.
I think that's Highmore.
East or west?
I just went through it. I am west of Highmore.
Okay.
About a mile, if that.
Okay. And this is Scott.
Say again.
What was your name?
Jason. Brownsburg.
Brownsburg. Perfect. Okay.
As a politician, Jason Brownsburg makes a name for himself attending county Republican events around the state. No Lincoln Day dinner is too far. On September 12, 2020, Brownsburg travels to Redfield to attend the Spink County Lincoln Day dinner at a bar and grill called Rooster's. Driving home that night, he hits and kills Joe Beaver. In the days that follow the crash, the Attorney General spends hours with North Dakota investigators answering questions about the incident. He describes the event.
These are usually dinners held in the spring, but because of COVID have been largely moved to the fall, and they are county party functions, and I guess it's the Republican function.
Okay.
A political function.
The dinner starts at 5. Brownsburg shows up a little early.
So how these events usually work is they have like a silent auction. It's the party faithful come in. There's some speeches throughout the night. There's approximately 30 people there. I didn't count.
Okay.
Per se, 20, 30 people.
Brownsburg gives a speech as does U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, and people take a few photos. Rounsberg eats a steak and baked potato and washes it down with a Coke. He leaves Redfield around 9. But the 2.5-hour drive back home to Pier changes everything. Rounsberg listens to the end of the Minnesota Twins game. At one point, he calls his father, but the call drops around the town of Miller. About an hour into the drive, he reaches the town of Highmore and thinks about getting gas.
I looked to the left and right, and they just both looked closed, so I didn't do that. And I went through, and I saw a sign that said 65 miles an hour. So I believe I started to accelerate. And then I saw a sign that said 48 miles to Pier. And, you know, you just kind of did one of those groans, like, oh, you still got 48 miles to go. And then, quite frankly, wham!
That moment is when Jason Rounsberg hits something. It's a moment that will affect events for many people for years to come. The story continues after a break.
Short Walk is made possible with your Friends of SDPB membership and by the support of Explore South Dakota Fund. Corporate support for Short Walk comes from Turbeck Law Office in Watertown, attorneys handling insurance and personal injury claims. More at turbecklaw.com. For regular updates on all the news around the state, subscribe to The Morning Report, delivered twice a week to your inbox. We also produce a daily news podcast. You can find out more information about both at sdpb.org/news.
Are you injured at all, Jason?
I am not, but my car sure as hell is.
Uh-oh, are you out of the roadway?
I am out of the roadway. I was able to get over, but...
Okay.
Okay, what? It sure hit and smashed my windshield.
Oh, no. Okay, do you think it was a deer or something?
Is he vomiting?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it was right in the roadway and...
Okay. And were you traveling westbound then?
Yes, westbound, oh. Back to Pier.
Okay. Alrighty, well, I will go ahead and let the sheriff know. He's the one that's on call right now.
I'm Lee Strubinger, and this is SDPB's Short Walk, the story of a political career, a fatal crash, and the consequences. The dispatch operator takes the rest of Attorney General Jason Rounsberg's driver's license information, and she calls the sheriff.
Good. Say, I've got a signal to car versus unknown. The driver is saying he's not sure what he hit, but it smashed his windshield and it did some pretty good damage to his vehicle. He's just west of Highmore. He can see town.
Okay.
Getting it mapped right now, but he's going to need to. It's just a heads up. It's Jason Ravensburg, the AG.
Okay. I will. Did you get over a deputy?
You are who we have on the board.
Hyde County Sheriff Mike Volek is a longtime lawman in the middle of his sixth term in office when he gets the call about a crash near Highmore. The sheriff lives just west of the crash scene and arrives a few minutes later. In the days following the crash, investigators interview Volek. He tells them he finds Rounsberg next to his car with his cell phone flashlight on, looking in the ditch.
All right. And what did he tell you?
That he thought he hit something.
Okay.
Which
did he
is
say
pretty
what he,
apparent, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And I said, through here, we have deer accidents constantly.
So the two men look for their deer, but they can't find it. Rounsberg's car is badly damaged and undrivable. It'll take a tow driver an hour to get to the crash scene and another hour to tow the car back to Pier. It's close to 11 p.m., and not wanting to keep the attorney general waiting, Sheriff Volek lends Rounsberg his personal vehicle to continue the drive home. Rounsberg leaves the scene. But something bothers Volek. Based on the damage to the car, the deer must be nearby. He returns to the scene and sees something illuminated in the grass.
You had mentioned that you saw a light glowing?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever go check that light out?
I looked at it and it looked like a light bulb out of the car.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't go down and pick it up.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's like, I wish I had taken a picture of it.
And it was on though?
It was on.
Okay. Have you ever seen that before?
No.
Okay.
No.
Folick tells investigators he's about 5 feet from a light in the ditch, but his curiosity ends there, and he does not investigate it further. According to the crash investigation report, Beaver carries a flashlight as he walks along the road that evening. According to diagrams of the scene, both Volek and Roundsburg would have walked past Beaver's body that night. To this day, Jason Roundsburg maintains he did not see what he hit that night.
It sure hit and smashed my windshield.
Oh, no. Okay, do you think it was a deer or something?
Did you vomiting?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it was right in the roadway and...
Okay.
Jason Roundsburg has not responded to multiple requests for an interview for this podcast. The next morning, Roundsburg returns to the sheriff's personal vehicle. Roundsburg's chief of staff, Tim Borman, is also there. Borman describes what happens next when he talks months later to a House impeachment committee.
He had seen some pieces of his vehicle. He wanted to stop at that scene and just look around to see if he could get an idea of what had happened the night before. I was like, that's fine. Followed him to that site. He pulled in. There was a large piece of undercarriage from the car on the shoulder of the road, and I parked a couple of car lengths or so behind. He got out of his vehicle. He started walking west. I got out of mine, started walking to the east. I was looking at glass and other bits and pieces that were along the roadway.
And that's when Roundsburg discovers Joe Beaver's body, which has been lying along Highway 14 for roughly 10 hours.
He called my name. I turned and looked at him. He was motioning towards the ditch with one hand saying, there's a man. I went over and to where he was motioning and looked, and I saw Mr. Beaver's body in the ditch.
Here's Sheriff Folick at the scene moments later, calling in the discovery.
Public safety dispatch, this is Mike.
Hey, Mike. I need a DCI agent, and I was filming over here.
Okay. And what do you got going on?
Well, I have a dead body in the ditch.
Okay.
Days later, Roundsburg speculates with investigators about what he could have hit.
I can see how you say I should have seen him, but I didn't see him.
And I'm just doing it from a logical...
No, I did not see him.
That's what I'm just saying. It's from a logical mm-hmm. perspective, and that's what we're talking about all along here.
Mm-hmm.
We, from a logical perspective, if you went by that,
I don't know.
I'm looking, I would have seen that. And we asked a number of people, so when you go looking for a deer, you know, what...
I scanned into the ditch and walking back towards my car, but I did not see him.
Again, neither did Sheriff Folick, who speaks with investigators days after the crash.
Because I'm trying to picture it, and I'm thinking, you would have had to walk by the body.
You had to walk by the body,
walk
to, get
by
to,
the
body
to get to the flashlight.
That's what I said. Why didn't I see the damn body?
Roundsburg says he did not drink the night of the crash. Security footage, first-hand accounts, and a toxicology test taken the next day back up the claim. He tells investigators he might have been looking at his radio or the speedometer when he struck Beaver, but he's not sure which. And that begs the question, how could this happen? 22 hours after the fatal crash, Joe Beaver's family is called in to identify the body. When I talk with Beaver's cousin, Nick Nemec, the Monday after the crash, it's clear he is frustrated.
I want to know why it took them 22 hours to call the family to identify the body. I want to know why it took them 10 hours from when the family told them who the dead man was for them to call us to come and identify the body.
Nimick says even after the family tells investigators that Joe Beaver is missing, the information trickles in slowly.
We want answers, just why it's taken so long for authorities to get their ducks in a row, which is, and it sounds like that's what they're trying to do, is get their ducks in a row. And it stinks.
Normally, the Department of Criminal Investigation handles interrogations into a case like this. But that department is in the Attorney General's office, which presents an obvious and immediate conflict of interest.
How are we doing, Jay? Good? Okay.
So on the Tuesday following the crash, Governor Noem holds another press conference to announce that agents from North Dakota will conduct the investigation along with South Dakota Highway Patrol, which falls under the governor's office.
We offer every situation the same standard of investigative procedures that we would any other person, but we are adding an extra level of transparency and accountability that I think is necessary in this case.
Public Safety Secretary Price confirms the focus on transparency in getting the investigation to the public as soon as possible.
The governor has instructed the Department of Public Safety and me to release the investigative report as soon as it is complete.
It will take half a year to wrap up the investigation. It takes 18 months before the public gets access to the crash reports. One aspect of the investigation looks into Jason Roundsburg's cell phone use during his drive from Redfield to Pier. Investigators focus on that during multiple days of interviews.
Do you remember, were you using your phone at all for anything besides to make a couple phone calls?
Nope. The only phone calls I made were to my father, which ended prior to Miller.
Yep. Okay.
I have two phones, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
One was on the passenger seat, and the other one was on my console, and I did not, use them, then.
Okay.
I do not have the phone in my hands when the crash happened. I had, my hands on the wheel and looking at the speedometer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
According to the investigation report, cell phone data shows Roundsburg was on his phone in some capacity for 70% of the drive before he struck the man on the side of the road. He looked at his email and checked political websites. The North Dakota investigators remind him of that.
So what would you think, though, if I told you that when they did the phone extraction, they found some internet activity on your phone around that time?
Well, I don't not use my phone, but I did not use it at the time of the crash. No.
Okay. But were you using it up to the time of the crash?
Not that I recall.
But Roundsburg is using his state phone in the minute leading up to the crash. According to cell phone data, he looks at a right-wing website and an article about Joe Biden's family business dealings. He stops using his phone as he drives through the city limits of Highmore. Seconds later, Roundsburg will call 911. For years, Jason Roundsburg has tracked high-profile conservative issues, presenting them at majority Republican events across the state. That's how he lays the groundwork with folks who will help nominate him, a man who has never won an election before, to become the most powerful law enforcement official in the state.
And so it was easier for him to come in and offer a few facts that he, and some less than facts, that he gleaned off of the internet and get Republicans to nod and smile and say, yeah, wow, you're really intelligent. You ought to be in the White House, for Pete's sake.
That's next time on Short Walk. I'm Lee Strubinger. I wrote, reported, and produced this episode.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Lee Strubinger. Check out his podcast, Short Walk, anywhere you get your podcasts. And again, please consider supporting my work here by becoming a Spotlight Plus subscriber. To find out how to get all episodes without ads and much, much more, head over to dakotaspotlight.com. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you again next time.